Today on the Science and Spirituality podcast, we interviewed Elise Milan, who she's this the second episode we've recorded with her. So this intro or this her bio might sound familiar if you listen to her first episode, which was episode 199. We talked about breath work, but this topic was different. So as a reminder, Elise is a Denver-based breath work, energy medicine, and MAP Pilates instructor, practitioner, and workshop facilitator with ReSpirit Breathwork LLC. She guides conscious transformational meditation through breathwork healing sessions, both in person and online. Breathwork effectively rewires the nervous system, helping people emotionally regulate and somatically release stress, tension, and trauma from the body. Elise teaches breathing techniques for anxiety, stress, tension, grief, trauma, calm, clarity, energy, and focus. She is Pause Breathwork certified and a Four Winds Society Master Practitioner of Shamanic Energy Medicine, which is what we talked about in this episode. And finally, she's also a Club Pilates certified MAP Pilates instructor. So this topic, this conversation for this episode was specifically focused on shamanism and what Elise termed as energy medicine and helping people heal in that way. So that was the focus. It was a really interesting conversation because at least in my thought processes, like when I hear shamanism or a shaman, I don't think of a Westerner. I think of, say, like someone from Eastern traditions, and more indigenous backgrounds. But it was a fascinating conversation anyway, especially because of the Four Winds Society where she trained at and hearing their background. So it was a good conversation. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I like how she mentioned it as energy medicine too, because for me, like with the background in acupuncture, like that's sometimes how you can explain it to people about like it's like energy medicine, like moving energy within the body. Of course, there's like a scientific aspect to it, which I feel like we asked her questions about that too, and she was able to kind of field those as well. So if anyone doesn't know anything about shamanism, like this was a really good like intro episode, especially because we also talked about like what the general pushback she gets from people when she talks about shamanism and like how she answers those kind of questions. So really good intro episode for shamanism, and Elise is like really great to talk to, so it was a good episode.
Definitely. And I just had a thought. I don't think we actually have an episode on shamanism. I think this might have been the first one. However, it made me think, and I didn't even think of this while we were recording, but my friend Beth Birkins, colleague friend Beth Birkins, who is a guest on our podcast twice, I'm looking back in the episodes, episode 189 is when we interviewed her. She's a shaman as well, has been a shaman for a couple of decades, maybe even 3 or 4 decades. So we didn't talk about shamanism particularly in that episode, but that's a shaman who has much more experience, you could say.
Is Beth
But
the Hawaiian, the one that learned the Hawaiian tradition? No.
no. Yeah, that was a different one.
Okay.
That was a completely different episode. But yeah, I was just thinking of her. We might have her on maybe for like a more seasoned perspective on shamanism. But anyway.
But you know, that's a good point that you bring that up. Just last thing, because like it's like the word shamanism, like you were saying, gets like a weird connotation to it, because you're thinking of someone like from the Eastern tradition, but there's like traditions all around the world that use energy medicine and talking about like past lives and dealing with trauma, and like they just use different words for it.
For
So,
sure.
and we did touch on that in this podcast too, about how like it's a general thing that a lot of people use. It's just shamanism is what she calls it because that's how she trained.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. So enjoyed the episode. I'm sure there'll be some gold nuggets or sparks of insight for you in this path.
Welcome to the Science and Spirituality Podcast, where we dive deep into universal spiritual principles and ground them in modern science. My name is Chris Carden.
And my name is Kevin Carden, and we are committed to simplifying the spiritual side of success for you with easy-to-understand scientific research so you can walk away with practical tools to create radical transformations in your life. Let's get started. Elise, welcome back to the podcast. I'm thrilled that you're here.
Thank you for having me back a second time, you guys. I'm excited too.
Yeah. And just for anyone who had not listened or had not even been aware that you were a guest on our podcast before, it is episode 199, How to Use Breathwork to Heal and Transform Your Life. And Elise obviously is a breathwork facilitator, but also is a neo shaman, as you share. So I'd love to hear your story, your background, just what brought you to this journey or what brought you to this modality or way of helping people?
Yeah, I definitely kind of stumbled upon it. It was never my intention to dive into shamanism. You just take one foot in front of the other and all of a sudden you're in shaman school. So my title this year, sometimes it changes every year as you step into new offerings, is I'm a conscious transformational breathwork facilitator, energy medicine practitioner, and Pilates instructor. So I say energy medicine because there's a lot of resistance to shamanism. Mm. And I identify the neo-shaman, meaning new or revived or new age shaman of the West. And I hesitate to call myself a shaman. It's more of a set of practices and tools and techniques for healings that dives really deep into chakra work and emotional clearings in something called the luminous energy field, which we'll talk about later. But how I got into this, that's a very good question. After my 6-month breathwork program, I was really missing an embodiment piece because it was all online. And I thought, I struggled with what's my business name, which is ReSpirit Breathwork, LLC. And who's my audience? How am I going to birth this breathwork business into the world? I had big dreams, but I didn't really know how to bring them into fruition. So I went to a metaphysical fair with my neighbor because healers need other healers. And I like getting energy readings myself. And I sat down in front of this angelic, shamanic yogi tarot reader who's very accurate in her tracking and her readings. And I was a little hesitant to tell her what was going on. She goes, "What brings you in today?" And I said, "Do I have to tell you? I don't want to taint the reading." And she's like, "You don't have to. You could just see what comes up." So she started, you know, reading my astrology and telling me very accurate things about myself. She said, "You have some interesting qualities. What are you doing these days?" And I hesitated telling her breath work. And she goes, "Ah, that's the question. We need to find the path forward." And I said, "I think I know the path forward, you know, breath work, my account executive sales job of 10 years ended a week ago. I feel strangely calm about it. I know what I'm stepping into. I just don't know how to do it." And she just starts reading and tracking and says, "Well, in case you didn't know, you're a shaman." And I was like, "I'm a what? A shaman?" I was like, "I don't even know what that word means. I can't be that. I knew I was a healer. I didn't know what type." She goes, "Well, the breath work kind of suits you because you unlock students." She's like, "You're definitely a carrier of messaging." And then she started kind of telling me about shamanism. They're half in the spirit world, half in the real world. And they bring teachings to people just for healing on a deeper level, on an energetic level, which is completely opposite of Western medicine. So after that reading, my neighbor was like, how'd it go with your reading with Sonia? And I said, "It's not every day you're told you're a shaman. We have much to Google." So we went to lunch, Googled shamanism. I was like, "Where do I even start?" So I started looking at shaman schools, thinking it was very weird, woo-woo, very esoteric. Is this for me? And it dived into chakra work and just deeper psychology work that sounded interesting to me. So I had a couple calls with a couple universities. I thought I was going to go to Chile for a month and do a really deep medicine wheel dive. But it was sold out. So I ended up doing a 6-month online program, similar to my breathwork program, and got connected with the Four Winds Society Light Body School. They are based out of Florida and Chile. They had a really unique curriculum that dived into neuroscience and actually healing your physical body with diet. The idea was so people can see more, they unblock their bodies. Basically, they teach you how to heal your body so you can become a better healer with less attachments when you work on other people. But I put my breathwork business on hold because I didn't know what would unfold or what new gifts or techniques I would acquire from energy medicine school, which is what I call shaman school. And here we are. So now I have a unique set of offerings and I have the embodiment piece that I was missing after my breathwork program. And yeah, here I am in my fullest expression, not hiding the term shamanism, even though I get pushback from the community sometimes on that. And I had resistance to that word myself. So hopefully this podcast can help shed some light on confusion around shamanism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my story.
So I think it's kind of interesting.
I think it's kind of interesting how like I mean, I don't know if like alternative medicine is the correct word for this, but like the more that you develop skills in this area, the more you see that other things kind of like complement what you already know. So like, for example, like the breathwork stuff, and then like you went into shamanism, and now you can, I feel like you definitely still use the breathwork as part of the shamanism and the energy healing, because it's all like kind of wrapped up into this, I guess just this other modality of healing that has a lot of different facets. Like, do you find that to be the case?
Without question, I was having such shamanic experiences and visions in my breathwork program that the other people weren't, and I couldn't make sense of it. And so when I sat down in front of that tarot reader, she was like, yeah, all of this is very shamanic. And I'm like, is this a remembrance? Have I done this before? What's going on? But also, you know, we talked about some magical, mystical, synchronistic things that happened in the last podcast. And like, it's definitely been, I don't know how else to say this so it doesn't sound like conceited, divinely guided with such serendipitous moments that I had to keep going forward. For example, I applied for a scholarship, a partial scholarship with the energy medicine school. And I played a game with spirit, and I was like, okay, spirit, if shaman school is the way, and now is the time, the money will show up in my bank account. And that was in October. January rolled around, again, the week before shaman school started. This is always my pattern. I get pushed to a stress point, holding faith. And my unemployment got approved after 16 weeks and a couple miracles. And then I got the partial scholarship because I wrote an 8-hour essay about how I wanted to bring breathwork to my community and dive deeper into chakra work so I could do maybe chakra recordings for breathwork so people can clear themselves at home, you know, and start proactively healing themselves through breath. And shaman school acknowledged that breathwork is really the doorway for energy medicine healings and journeying and attuning to clients. So I got the partial scholarship. So all of a sudden it was half priced. The money landed in my bank account. And the weekend before, I was like, I have to start school on Monday, and I'm behind in my book, the books that I'm supposed to be reading and prepping for it. So yeah, again.
That does sound like it was divinely guided. And I know you mentioned like, oh, I don't want it, don't know how to say it without it sounding conceited. I think it's the opposite. In a way, it's selfless, because there's the oneness of life within all things, right? And when we're guided, then I think that's a really inspiring message for others that is validating, because I think we all have experiences like that. But to call it as such, sure, might challenge our own kind of thinking about it. But I think it's a part of a bigger plan.
Thank you. That makes me feel better. It's definitely part of a bigger plan. You know, my entire family thought I was crazy. They're like, shaman school, breathwork, what are you doing? But to me, it made perfect sense. I was like, if I could learn the secrets of the universe and important energy medicine stuff that they're not teaching in Western society in ways that's going to amplify my breathwork business, I'm going to do that.
Yeah,
right.
And it was absolutely beautiful, but it was 6 months of shadow work. And, you know, dedication and practicing online with a lot of strangers in Jerusalem and Canada. And, I mean, it was amazing, the people, the network that you get tapped into with people that are just interested in this stuff. And, you know, they're normal. There are a lot of yogis. There's a lot of rolfers, you know, acupuncture practitioners already that just wanted to either dive deeper into work or, you know, help heal themselves. So I do feel like when people come together for the sake of learning, it will just be blessed. And especially if it's, you know, esoteric things that are a little hidden from people or harder to understand. But I landed in a good spot. I'm so glad I did it. And it definitely changed my being. And I'm happy to share it with other people, for the right people who are open to it. It's very energetically expensive work because it's one-on-one. But yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was going to say, go ahead.
But so we've obviously been talking about your journey, Elise, but so what is your definition of shamanism? Like, if you could share that with our listeners.
Oh, that's a loaded question. So to my understanding, the term shaman is a Siberian word that means for one who can see in the dark. So they can typically see light energy. Shamans believe in anima, which is animation, any or consciousness, anything that has a vibration has a consciousness, so you can talk to it. You can build a relationship with this plant. You can get information from it. Essentially, shamans are just trackers, but they're tracking multiple fields of information through whatever channels they're open to deliver healings. The purpose of shamanic energy medicine, according to the Four Winds Society, is actually to learn how to die consciously and how to die alive, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
And you go around the medicine wheel and there's pillars of shamanism. A lot of people think it's a religion or similar to paganism or voodoo. It is not. Voodoo and shamanism are kind of similar in that they both work in the luminous energy field. So you're kind of tapping into somebody's spiritual body. So shamans will clear imprints of disease at the level of the blueprint in the luminous energy field, LEF. So it's essentially like a bundle of stale, dark energy or chi that's not vital or in movement and is toxic and will eventually cause blockages in organs and the body system. Voodoo, so that's good positive intention for healing, right? Voodoo is going to be more similar concept, but with malintention. So you might find an imprint of disease, tap it, and blow it up. So it happens at a faster rate. So if you're working in the spiritual energy body, the last thing that's going to be affected is the physical body. So you have the spiritual, emotional, mental, physical. So it typically takes 2 to 4 weeks for stuff to show up. But once you start to do this work and more synchronicities happen because you're stepping out of time, shamans definitely step out of time. And I was doing that with breath work and I had no idea what was happening. They say you step out of time in between breaths, but when you create total stillness, you're stepping out of time. So breath work brings you into total stillness. Meditation brings you into total stillness. And anything that can become a meditation, if you're truly present, right? And embodying your space mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. And that's the whole point of this work is embodiment work. So we're less fragmented and we're more whole.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
I guess like describing it as embodiment work, you can kind of see how the breath work really ties into that. Because again, it's really all about kind of coming back to the present, right? And like really feeling connected and like within your body. Because a lot of times people, let's say with like anxiety or depression, like they're usually somewhere else. Like they're thinking about the future or they're thinking about something that happened in the past. And like usually when you have all that energy going on inside of you, it's very hard for your body to actually start to process things and heal things. And so kind of sounds like as a shaman, like you kind of, or energy healer, you're kind of helping guide that process so that they become more, I guess, in tune with their body so that their natural healing processes can take over. Is that kind of like, am I on the right track in a nutshell there? Or am I totally?
No, absolutely. I definitely put on workshops. My classes, sessions, workshops are kind of loaded with stuff like this, little sips of wisdom that I hope people collect or pick up because I like sharing it. It's what a teacher does.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to say in my sessions that the body is always in the present because it is physically dense. It knows no different. The mind, the monkey mind, can be 100 different places at once. It can be worried about the past, stressed about the future, but your breath goes two directions, out and in. So when you attune to it, you naturally kind of drop into the body and kind of yoke the mind, body, and spirit. So it's a really quick door in. The shamanic energy healings just clear blockages and help kind of reset the nervous system and then dives deeper into the subconscious to clear negative programming or core emotional wounds that, and people only have about 3 or 4 of them, which is really not satisfying. What's the word? Oh, I can't think of the word, but it's really comforting to know that we don't have to attack, 15 sets of emotional issues. You really just have 3 or 4 core ones that spawn 30 sets of mental beliefs. And we can spend years in talk therapy, 2, 3, 6 years in talk therapy, working at the level of the mind, clearing those, or we can just go straight to the emotional issue and clear it. So that's what the shamanic energy medicine does.
You can also spend years and years dealing with just symptoms of that one thing, because it can manifest in so many different other ways. And I feel like that's kind of where like Western medicine has failed a little bit, in terms of like, you know, you go to a different doctor for every different type of symptom, and they're going to treat just the symptom. No one talks to each other. Like they don't really get a full picture of your health. I think things are changing a little bit now, but that's like basically like what I've seen throughout my history of dealing with Western medicine. And so it definitely sounds like this type of medicine kind of hits it at the source. And like, well, I guess while you're doing these healings, like, do you even have to know what the core wound was as a shaman? Or is it more of like being some kind of like conduit and giving the person the space so that the body can bring it up and release it on its own? Like, do you need to be in the know about?
It's a beautiful question. It's kind of a mix of both. So chakras are really sensitive. And when people typically come to me for energy healings, I noticed last year they all had a similarity of feeling stuck, disconnected from their bodies. Most of them were female. A lot of them were on birth control, which, you know, I'm not a doctor. I shouldn't tell people to get off birth control, but women cannot hear their bodies or attune to themselves. And men can't attune to them if they're on birth control. That's just a fact. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so they'd come to me with these issues, and I typically say what's going on, and, you know, they'll tell me whatever's coming up on their mind, and it's really messy. It's emotional, messy stuff. And it typically always relates to relationships or family wounds or self-worth issues, insecurity, you know, these deep core human collective wounds. And there's collective wounds that we're born into. And then we have our own personal wounds from our family dynamics and our conditioning 0 to 7. So, you know, there's two things going on, but that's usually always what comes up at the end of the session. Whether they fully tell me the root of the issue or not, we always land on it. Mm-hmm. Energy doesn't lie. So when I track where the blockages are in the chakras, and I get the information flowing in the ways that I receive it, it doesn't always make sense to me, because spirit works in pictures or downloads or inspiration, right? Realizations. I'm claircognizant and I'm clairsentient. So I get really accurate information and downloads and words, and then I get the feeling. And sometimes I see pictures, but I often have to decode that and get my ego out of the way, where I don't make a story about it. And then when I decide what to share with the person, and then they tell me what that means to them. Hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about the, you know, what you mentioned before about your ego kind of getting in the way and having to silence that? Because it, just some like context, like I know Kevin and I are like, we can feel other people's energy really well, like empathetic, like we're very what's the word I'm looking
we're
for?
We're empaths, Kevin. Dude.
Empaths. Yeah. That's the thing. And so a lot of times, like, especially when I'm not as connected to my body, or say, let's say I'm having like a bad day or like a bad week or something, it's very hard for me to determine if I'm feeling this way or if someone else around me is kind of feeling bad too. So like, do you deal with that a lot in your practice? And like, do you have tips for that? And like, how do you deal with that kind of like difference? Because again, you're working with people's energies and you yourself have your own energy. So yeah.
Yes. Oh, this is such a great question. I love all your guys' questions. So I have a two-pronged answer. Shaman school taught us to be a hollow bone. So just kind of a vessel to receive. And they had practices and tools to kind of energetically get in that space, so you're more open to receiving. So there's quite a bit of prep I do before my sessions, just to open sacred space, to keep myself safe, right? To invite in the lineage or my spirit team, so I can facilitate in the highest good of the client. Ethics really comes into play when it comes to the practitioners you're working with. So that's one answer. The second answer is, getting out of the way. I have to leave my ego at the door when I do sessions, because, and also I have to stay open. I have no idea what's going to come up. I have a very strong solar plexus. I know my own energetic makeup enough, where I actually can't, even though I'm empathic and I can feel other people to a degree, and I can like tune into them. I actually have so much energy as a manifesting generator myself that I can disconnect pretty easy to be in my own energy. So that actually helps me a little bit. I think in more ways than I've heard about other practitioners who might need to do a lot more energy clearings themselves. But I also think it was, I have an easier time because of the powerful tools that I was taught by very powerful mentors, which is open double sacred space, invite and help, you know, and hold the highest. So shamans are also visualizers, right? They dream new worlds into being. They kind of work in that energetic space and then bring it into manifestation. So they're very heavy on visualization. So I was taught to, when somebody enters my door, hold the highest vision of them healed already. Hold that picture. And, you know, there's a lot going on. We invite archetypes to be with us and spirits, and there's flower water and stuff I spray. I mean, it looks very witchy. It totally does. But if people ever ask questions, I can explain it in ways that make them like, so I ask my clients too, not to bring them out of their healing session if they just want to, you know, drop in or tune out. But I'm like, do you want me to tell you what I'm doing? Would that make you more comfortable when I'm working over you? I'm happy to explain it. But I also have a gift of gab. I'm wordy and I'm nerdy. So I like to know what's going on. And I think that's the teacher in me too, that just wants to educate.
Yeah. I think it's important. Honestly, I think even like a Western doctor should have to have some type of training in that kind of like being able to like hold space. Cause I was just like, and Kev, maybe you can like, you have some experiences even working with coaching clients. Like sometimes like you'll get off a coaching call and you'll just be like exhausted. Like I had that experience when I was doing acupuncture at this place called Modern Acupuncture. And I was the only acupuncturist there. He was only usually one working at a time, and you would do like treatments every 15 minutes. And like, I remember like I would work like a 70-hour day and I would feel exhausted at the end of the day, even though I didn't really feel like I physically exerted myself so much, but it was just like being able to hold space for clients. And like, anytime like you put a needle in, like there's a transfer of energy from like you to them. It's just like, so I think like, I'm just thinking back to my school and like, if I learned more of how to hold space, because you know, they talked about holding space, but they didn't actually give us a lot of tools about how to do it. And so, I think it's just good for anyone who's in the healing profession of any kind to be able to kind of be able to do that and learn tools to how to do that. I know you kind of touched on some, but was there like a specific one that you learned in school? Where you're like, that's the one I go to, like that specific tool really helps.
Yeah, there were quite a few. And that's one of the things I loved about school. It really taught me techniques and tools that I get to use for the rest of my life to build a better relationship with spirit and to make my medicine stronger. And I've heard the fun part when you become a healer is just picking and choosing different things from your toolbox and then bringing them, your own mix of magic, to whatever your offerings. But my favorite tools are Epsom salt baths, for sure. So it's a mix of, it's a two-part mix, two parts baking soda, one part Epsom salt. Huh. And there's a little bit of conflicting information on the internet, but that's what they taught us. 20 minutes, 20 minutes is the secret time amount for that, because it allows your body to detox. But after 20 minutes, you're going to start reabsorbing whatever you're releasing. So they taught us to take 20-minute Epsom salt baths and open our chakras and drain them, and then open our eighth chakra, which is called the Viracocha. There's a lot of like indigenous language that was involved in shaman school that's hard to translate because language is limiting to a certain degree. But Epsom salt baths, I use a lot of crystals too. Like I'll use selenite. I have some here, but I have a big selenite wand. It's very cheap. Nice. It was like $7.77, of course, at a crystal shop, but it's the size of my body. It's about this big. And I rake it down the front of my body, down the side of my body, down my back, around my head. And you can definitely feel it clearing blockages if you're sensitive enough. So that's a really good quick one. Grounding, obviously going outside, putting your feet on the earth, or laying on the earth, because the best conductors of, I don't want to say electricity, but grounding for us are the bottoms of our feet and then the backs of our arms. So we're literally made to walk on the earth and like lay lay on the earth and look up at the stars. So that's a really good one. Palo Santo, which you just saw me using, or sage. I prefer Palo Santo. What else is really good? Just saying prayers to release. You know, I'll brush stuff off after a client session and say, I have a really big script that someone gave me that I love, but it's like, I lovingly release this client and their name from my energy field. They're free to follow their own path. I'm free to follow mine. I can even send it to you if that would be helpful.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see it.
For sure, me too.
I'm on a grounding mat right now.
Yes, grounding mats. I love grounding mats. I have one in my car. And then there's a couple other ones too. Releasing techniques. Fire ceremonies are really good. So, you know, writing a list of things that you don't want to hang on to. That could be attachments to roles, identities, relationships, old patterns, writing them down and then just burning them in a fire, blowing into them. So you're energetically getting those attachments and feelings out of your mind, body, and psyche, and then just burning them in a fire. It could be a candle. It could be a chiminea like I have outside. Sand paintings are really good too. And that's a beautiful practice because you just go outside, you pick whatever's in bloom or season, flowers, leaves. You say thank you to the plant for its sacrifice. And then you get on the ground and you just work an issue, an emotional issue, or whatever you want to clear into this little collage of plants. And it's very therapeutic. Yeah, so it's grounding, it's therapeutic, it's creative. There's so many different things.
Yeah, and I guess you just got to kind of have to mix and match and try them and see which one's best for you. Because obviously, you know, one's probably going to be better for another person than the other.
Yes, absolutely. Which brings me to the point of plant medicine. Because shamans are really big with, they're earth keepers, right? What's interesting about shamanism is, or at least they said this in school, you have different types of shamans. So you could have a mountain shaman and they're more wisdom keepers. Ocean shamans are more seers. I think it's because of their diet. They eat more fish and omega, I don't know, six or three. That helps with their eyesight and their tracking of light energy. You know, I'm definitely more of a cosmic shaman. I am not a super earthy granola person. One of my friends, he was surprised when I said, I'm going to shaman school. He was like, what? Are you a witch? And I said, do I seem like a witch? And he was like, no, if anything, he goes, you're an astronaut. You're exploring different worlds. And I was like, that's what it feels like. If I could take my cosmic energy, learn shamanism, and bring them both together, that sounds powerful. But I definitely feel like more of a mountain keeper.
Got it. But continue, because you were speaking on plant medicine and how that relates.
Yeah, plant medicine. So ayahuasca is like known to be the shaman's kind of plant for psychedelic journeying. I haven't actually ever done it. It hasn't called to me yet. I would like to at some point. Conditions just haven't been right. I'm a little nervous. It has to be with the right people, but I've had such psychedelic experiences from breathwork alone, diving deep into it because it opens the heart chakra and pineal gland. So you get brain heart coherence really quickly. And I get visions that way, especially when I'm healing an emotional layer of things or working on someone. But in general, I mean, shamans work with all sorts of plants, plant medicine, right? So it's going to be the food you eat, nutraceuticals. The owner of the Four Winds Society and what makes that curriculum so different, studied under a ton of different shamans and cultures and continents for like 30 years. He was originally an anthropologist. His name is Alberto Bioldo. He has a ton of amazing books. Shaman, Healer, Sage is one I highly recommend. And during his adventures, he actually got really sick. He got a lot of parasites in his heart, in his brain, in his organs from the Amazon and other places. And Western doctors were like, you need to come home. There's no way you feel well. So he did a mix of chemo and fasting and heavy nutraceuticals, because he really had to pump his system up with the right dosages of vitamins, because our food is so leached of the potency of the vitamins that it used to have when, you know, things weren't GMO and everything was organic and the soil was more diversified. So we had more diversity in our food system. So our gut bacteria was more diverse. I mean, it dived deep into all of this. And the whole point was to make people's bodies less toxic so they could become more sensitive, so they could become better shamans and healers and trackers. A sensitive body is actually a healthy body. And we're seeing such high rates of autoimmune issues and cancer, and we're exposed to more chemicals and pesticides and technology than ever before. And, you know, I believe the body is smarter than the mind, and, you know, the body will heal if we get it in the right state, and people aren't fasting enough, myself included. I would like to do a 2 to 3 day fast once a quarter. It's very hard. You know, I don't like starving myself, but the intention with it is to let the body detox itself and let the body do the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if I could just take a point on fasting, because yeah. I think fasting is really interesting. And there, I mean, if anyone's interested, there's this doctor, I think he's out in California, his name's Walter Longo, and he's doing some really good research on cancer and fasting and this process called autophagy.
Yes.
And basically, when you fast for a certain amount of time, I forgot exactly the sweet spot of time, but it's like it's a few
20 hours.
Yeah, it's like once you get to a certain point, it's like your body will actually go and scavenge like old cells and like recycle them basically. And so when you do a fast, because I used to fast, I really, you know, this is kind of like making me want to get back into it, even just talking about it. But I used to do like 2 day fasts, like not once a quarter, but like I didn't really have like a system. But it was like, hey, I feel some inflammation in my body. I kind of feel a little like stagnant. I would do a fast for like 2 days. And like, you know, you get hungry after 12 hours or so, but then there's like a time period after like maybe 16 or so hours where like you kind of forget about the hunger and then you just feel super clear, super like clear minded. And you feel really great. And like, usually if you have any inflammation, it'll go away. Like if you have any like digestive issues, they'll kind of maybe stop for a little bit because you're giving your body that chance to actually stop digesting, which takes an enormous amount of energy, even if you're eating the right foods, and just gives it a chance to reset. The autophagy kicks in and then your body creates new cells. And so it's a very, very interesting process. And I know, you know, fasting has been talked about in the Bible and in a ton of other religious and spiritual books. And now we actually have the science behind why it works so well. So it's very interesting. If anyone's interested, Google fasting and stuff.
I would love to expand on that just a little bit, just from what I know, because I've researched it and experimented. So autophagy, I'm more interested in fasting for autophagy. A lot of people just want ketosis. The sweet spot would be both. But autophagy means self-eating, autophagy. So what happens when your digestive system goes a long enough period, 18 to 20 hours without food, is it just kind of shuts down and goes to sleep. So then what happens is all your healthy cells shut down and protect themselves, and your immune system goes into auto drive, cellularly cleaning house. And that process just takes longer to get to. And it's stressing the body just enough where it starts to regenerate. So it takes all those tangled proteins specifically in the heart, in the brain, that aren't replicating properly. And it, to my understanding, eats them up, regurgitates them into amino acids or building blocks for healthy protein. And that's how people can prevent. It is the best form of cancer prevention. All these tangled brain diseases we're seeing from older generations, like Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, and there's one other brain disease, but those are all from tangled proteins because people weren't fasting enough. And every time you fast, it like improves you everything, because it makes your body more resilient. It's going from, you know, carb burning, sugar burning to fat burning mode. And we're adapted to do that. There's a beautiful phrase I heard called, well, it's like when you starve something of the physical, you gain in the spiritual. I also really love the fasting because you start processing everything that you've been avoiding because your emotions come up. There's nothing to do, you know, but sit with your emotions and you get really energetically more sensitive because your body is purging. And then you can actually like channel or download or receive a lot more information. So I really like that just for my own personal practice, but it's hard to do if you have a 9 to 5, you need the brain power.
Yeah, I would do it on the weekends. Usually I do like a Saturday to Sunday night. But still it's like, it's difficult, but like, if you can just kind of get that feeling one time of the post hunger, like clarity, you kind of get a bit of addicted to it. Cause you're like, this feels really good. And it's just something to kind of revert back to. And it's like, it's another like great example of like how I feel like a lot of diseases, especially in like Western society, are diseases of excess and like doing too much, eating too much, like smoking too much, doing too many things versus like just actually like kind of taking a step back and doing less. And that's kind of what fasting is. It's like literally just, it's not eating. but yeah.
But it's also kind of that duality of this earth plane, right? It's like we have periods of fasting and then feasting, or periods of sleeping and repairing and then activation, right? So just looking at the energetics of it, it totally makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But it's hard to do. I do feel like you have to build up to especially a 2 to 3 day fast, because you don't want to shock the body too much. You need to titrate the system. So I would recommend people start with a 24-hour fast and then build up. Day two is the hardest. Day two, your hunger will be, you know, gnawing at you. And then I've heard if you get to day three, like you're just coasting and you have this energy and mental clarity and your skin looks amazing. And
yeah,
it's nice. Easier said than done for sure.
I know. That's a good point though, to build up to it. I would agree. It's, you don't want to be like, oh, I'm going to do a week fast. Then you've been eating.
Women have to be very careful. We're not supposed to fast a week before our cycle, a week before we bleed, because it really messes with hormones. But guys can do it anytime. So hopefully that wisdom or those shares are helpful for other people. It took me years to figure that out.
Yeah. Kev, did you have a question? I don't know if you've been waiting to ask something.
No.
Okay.
No. I was only going to just comment that this, I really love the tie-in with what you've been talking about with shamanism and like the spiritual world, and how, I mean, we're talking something very physical and about our health, but obviously it ties in. Like there's no separation.
Yeah.
There's no separation. I didn't even mean to end up in this metaphysical world. You know, breathwork made me feel better and I wanted to dive that direction. And then actually, as soon as I declared I wanted to support healers with my business, which is really anyone who's showing up to do the work, right? That's when the shamanic path opened up. So back to shamanism, if you guys have additional questions, because we got to wrap it up.
Yeah, Chris, yeah, you had something.
I just had a question that I've been wanting to ask for a bit, but I guess there wasn't a good time to ask it. But I was just wondering, because I know you spoke in the very beginning of the podcast about, like, you know, when you talk about shamanism, there's kind of like a pushback from a lot of people. Like, what is that main pushback from people? And what is your best way of like explaining that in like a simple way to kind of maybe try to get them on board? And not trying to like convince them, because I know that people who want to come to shamanism do it. But like, you know, if you're, let's say, at like a conference and like someone's talking to you about it, like what's like, do you have like a couple of hit, like really simple points about like, this is why it works, like, you know?
Yeah, I do. So to me, the resistance when people hear the word shaman, which I had as well, really comes from fear or lack of understanding, or thinking it's very religious and kind of out there, or witchy or pagan. But to me, it's actually very natural. Like, shamanism has been around in every culture on every continent since the beginning of mankind. It's just ways to harness the energies of this earth plane that are around us. And they'll acknowledge the four directions, the north, the south, the east, the west, the medicine wheel, the cosmos and earth energies, to kind of manipulate energy on earth. And there's it's a very old, powerful medicine, and you kind of tap into this lineage that of healers and wisdom keepers and luminous beings, and it does get very spiritual. I think people just don't understand it, you know, or the benefits of it. And there's so many shamans in the woods hiding, a lot of yogis that just don't want to say they're shamans, or old earth healers that had such resistance that they just don't even try anymore because it turns off half their audience. So that's why I say neo-shamanism, because I I feel I'm courageous. I'm not going to hide the type of techniques in school that I went to. If people are open to it, awesome. And if they're not, they're probably not the right clients or audience for me, and I shouldn't work with them. I like to work with integrity and in truth. And I don't care if that turns people off.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for answering that. I appreciate it.
Of course. I love these questions. There's a few important things we didn't really get to that I would love to kind of just
go
mention.
For it.
Sure. So the core practice of shamanism, healings, energy medicine, shamanic healings, is called an illumination process. So it's where we go into luminous energy field. You track, like, if a client comes to me, I say what's going on, and then them talking about their emotional issue kind of percolates it. And then you can track where it lives in their energy body. And then you just go in, you clear it. I use stones, crystals, Palo Santo, feathers. You might use a lot of earth elements to help with this process, to help absorb energy. One time I was talking to a massage therapist and she was like, you know, when I clear energy, and she went up, and I was like, you went up? Huh? Not down? Most people go down to earth. And she was really hesitant to tell me that she works with like a fairy lineage. And I was like, oh, cool. So you poof it up. So, you know, whatever people are connected to is the lineage that they're going to tap into. I remember going to a metaphysical fair once and I was like, is it sacrilegious to just invite everyone in? You know, my spirit team, my highest self, my grandparents, shamanic lineage, do they compete with each other? And the healer was like, nope. They're all parts of your lineage that you're connected to. And they're, you know, higher frequencies that are just there to help you for your highest good. So that was really comforting to me. But back to shamanism. So the illumination process is, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Also,
to illuminate, you're bringing light energy into the chakras to reawaken the chakras with higher order information in a way that's going to help heal on a radical level. Shamans will also work with extracting things from the luminous energy field that aren't supposed to be there. That's where it gets really crazy in my sessions, the things I extract out of people, because spirit works in the world of pictures, right, and visualizations. But typically it's going to be things in the like human collective consciousness that are weapons. So you'll extract spears or knives or, shackles or darts or just some crazy stuff that almost I don't want to tell clients half the time.
Like what you just took out of them?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. Oh my God, I've had a huge caterpillar taken out of me that was like a third in my head, a third in my heart, and a third in my knee. I had a spear. The classmate that was working on me was like, okay, I'm running out of room on my table. I was like, it's a spear. It's not just like a short stick. And yeah, I've had some crazy things taken out of me. The lead shaman of our school said people typically have 16 to 18 things they need extracted. So that's why you have to do, like, I offer a 3 shamanic illumination package because you almost have to do a minimum of 3 just to clear the field enough to get to a point where you're actually shifting timelines, where there's enough spaciousness where they can invite in the highest possible outcome for their destiny or what they're stepping into.
Got it.
I know, right? Shamans also work with soul retrievals, so which sounded really crazy to me, but it's actually really beautiful. So the idea is if somebody has a traumatic experience, they might fragment. So like a divine part of them flees and needs to be recovered or healed. They need something to be reintegrated into life. So a soul retrieval, you just recover that part and then reintegrate it into your life so people are more whole and fully embodied. And then there's, you know, rites of passage and trainings, things you get gifted from mentors, because it's typically a lineage of wisdom keepers passing on medicine, right? So yeah, hopefully that sums it all up very quickly. Any additional
questions? As best as you can, of course.
Yeah. I don't talk like a normal person anymore. I'm highly aware of this.
Right. But it was more so just that those points you just brought up, I'm somewhat familiar with the soul, not so much the weapons, but I think I shared with you at least some months ago, but that had shamanic healings, and they were fascinating. I mean, the kind of soul retrievals and like the synchronicities that I experienced, like it was some years ago now, but those topics, I feel like can have their own episode, their own like hour talk about each, but yeah, it's sake of time. We won't have the time to talk about it in this episode. But yeah, I think I don't have any other questions specifically, but I appreciate you bringing that up because it's way more than just, all right, like chakra clearings or something like that. It's obviously a whole body of work.
It's a whole body of work. I got lucky. I went to a really good school that had really well-rounded trainings. Typically, to be a shaman, you're supposed to go to the Andes and study under somebody for like 10 years. But they're kind of saying this medicine needs to be brought to the world quicker. Anybody right. who's willing to learn, we're gonna teach them. So there's a prophecy that says like the new age, new earth, the healing of the earth will happen when shamans come from the West. So neo shamanism. Mm-hmm. And they spread that medicine across the earth. Also, one of the beautiful things that Shaman School touched upon is the point of shamanism is to help people remember their divinity and like step into being extraordinarily human. There's a phrase and it's very indigenous, I would say, but we're not here just to grow corn. We're here to grow gods and to, you know, become the best version of ourselves. And that is very much a spiritual journey. And it's different for everyone and everyone's on their own timeline. So when they're open to healing, I think a lot of people just seek a shaman. If they have a family member that dies and they want to talk to them again, they need to access the other world, they seek a shaman. So I know we're out of time. I so love these conversations, you guys, but I want to be respectful.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Jinx. That's funny. Yeah, Jinx. We're definitely brothers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, thank you, Elise. This is fantastic. And again, there's so much, obviously, that we can cover, but I think you did a really great job of, I mean, you speaking of coming from a well-rounded school, I think this is a well-rounded episode.
Yes. Okay. Well, hopefully it demystifies shamanism a little bit. If anyone has questions, I would love to answer them. My website is respiritbreathwork.com. And I talked about the core of my offerings. I do online sessions, in-person sessions, and my private practice is going to grow at the slow and steady pace that it's going. And I'm completely fine with that.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. Well, thank you for being here. And we'll include links to those things you just mentioned and a couple others you had shared in the episode description. So
happy to share resources. Yes, you're so welcome. Have a beautiful day, you guys.
You too.
Thanks, you too.
Bye.
And that's it for today. So thanks for tuning in. We really hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed recording it. So any questions, any comments, connect with us on Instagram personally at Kevin F. Carton
or at Chris J. Carton or our podcast or Instagram page at Science and Spirituality Podcast. And if you feel guided to, the one thing that we do ask is for you to please rate the podcast and also leave a review. This way we can reach more people and in that way impact more lives. So with that, we'll see you on the next episode.